Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Pete Musto, Ann Ball, and Dan Friedel. Later, Mario Ritter will tell us what's trending today. But first, here is Pete Musto.
President Donald Trump's administration is postponing a program that provides visas for foreign entrepreneurs to launch companies in the United States. It plans to review whether or not to cancel the program. The program, known as Startup Visa, was announced last year by then-President Barack Obama. It was designed to give entrepreneurs permission to live in the U.S. for 30 months to start their companies. The program would give a visa to non-U.S. citizens who make $250,000 in investments or win $100,000 in government grants to support their proposals. These visas could be renewed. Leaders in the technology industry had asked the Trump administration to put the program in place. They believe it is a way for immigrants to come to the U.S. to start new companies and create more jobs. The Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, has estimated that almost 3,000 entrepreneurs would be eligible for such visas each year. The program was to have taken effect next week. But DHS has published a notice delaying the start of the program until March 14, 2018. The notice says DHS plans to cancel the program, but is asking for reaction from the public before it makes a final decision. Steve Case is an entrepreneur who founded the tech company AOL. He said delaying the startup visa program is a big mistake. Case wrote on Twitter, "Immigrant entrepreneurs are job makers, not job takers." Bobby Franklin is the president of the National Venture Capital Association, an organization for startup investors. He called the administration's decision extremely disappointing. At a time when countries around the world are doing all they can to attract and retain talented individuals, he said, the Trump administration is signaling its intent to do the exact opposite. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, a department of DHS, said it delayed the rule to meet the requirements of one of President Trump's executive orders that limited the ability of federal officials to permit foreign nationals to remain in the United States. I'm Pete Musto.
A huge iceberg, seven times the size of New York City, broke off of Antarctica, scientists said Wednesday. The iceberg that broke away is 5,800 square kilometers large. It is described as weighing 1 trillion tons. That is about the same volume as the Great Lake Erie between Canada and the U.S. Scientists at the University of Swansea in Britain described the iceberg as one of the largest ever recorded. It broke off from the Larsen C ice shelf over the last few days. The Larsen ice shelf is located off the coast of northwestern Antarctica. The area is connected to land but floats on seawater instead of sitting on top of the continent. The process of the ice breaking away and moving into the ocean is known as calving. Researchers are watching closely to see whether climate change is affecting the calving process. For months, they have kept their eyes and satellites on a large crack or break in this section of the Larsen ice shelf. While its breaking off into the water was not a surprise, the timing was. We have been anticipating this event for months and have been surprised how long it took for the rift to break through the final few kilometers of ice, said Adrian Luckman of Swansea University and MIDAS. We will continue to monitor both the impact of this calving event on the Larsen C ice shelf and the fate of this huge iceberg. The U.S. Space Agency, NASA, and European Space Agency satellites have been watching the shelf. So have many people around the world who saw pictures of the large crack in the ice. The final break was first seen in an image from NASA's AquaMOTUS satellite instrument. This is not the first time parts of the Larsen ice shelf have broken off the frozen continent. The Larsen A shelf broke off in 1995, and the Larsen B fell in 2002. For years now, researchers from the British-based Antarctic Project, MIDAS, have been monitoring the rift in Larsen C. The researchers said, because it was already floating before it broke off, there is no immediate impact on sea level. This event leaves the Larsen C ice shelf smaller by more than 12%, and the landscape of the Antarctic Peninsula changed forever. The project is investigating the effects of a warming climate. They use a combination of fieldwork, satellite observation, and computer models. So now what is going to happen to the iceberg? The researchers suggest it is likely to break into pieces. They say that some of the ice may stay nearby for decades. Other parts may drift or slowly move north into warmer waters. Martin O'Leary is a glacier expert at Swansea University and a member of the MIDAS project team. He said, although this is a natural event, and we're not aware of any link to human-induced climate change, This puts the ice shelf in a very vulnerable position. Anna Hogg, with the Center for Polar Observation and Modeling at the University of Leeds, says there is not the evidence yet to say it is caused by climate change. At this point, it would be premature to say that this was caused by global warming, she said. Scientists will be watching the rest of the shelf for any signs of it becoming unstable. Adrian Luckman added that the ice shelf could regrow slowly, or more calving could lead to its breaking off. Luckman said scientists have different opinions on what will happen next. Our models say it will be less stable, but any future collapse remains years or decades away, he said. I'm Ann Ball.
Did you know bison live on a small island off the coast of California? Bison are large mammals native to the United States. They are also known as buffalo. People usually see bison in places like Yellowstone National Park, which covers parts of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. In 2016, the bison was named the official mammal of the United States. But how did these large animals, known for living in the northern part of the United States, get to a small island southwest of Los Angeles? Well, like many things related to Los Angeles, it had to do with Hollywood and the movie business. Julie King is the Director of Conservation and Wildlife Management at the Catalina Island Conservancy. She said 14 bison arrived on the island in 1924. The animals were supposed to be part of a movie. They did not get into the movie and were left behind by the filmmakers. The bison have now lived on the island for almost 100 years. At one time, there were about 600 of them. That is because they had no predators, such as large cats, wolves, bears, and humans. Now, due to birth control and a conservation plan, there are only 120 on the island. The Catalina Island Conservancy takes care of the bison herd. When there are too many animals, they are moved to other parts of the U.S. Some of the bison from Catalina were moved to Native American lands in North and South Dakota. Bison used to live there, but had not been seen in those areas for 100 years. You can now find bison in every state, but in the late 1800s, they almost completely disappeared. The bison on Catalina are smaller than the ones on the mainland. That is because they are not native. There are fewer grasses on the island than in places like Montana. King said the animals do not get the right nutrition on the island. They do not really belong there, but they have become well known, and people visit the island just to see them. Debbie Rosen likes the bison so much, she wrote a children's book about them. It is called The Amazing Adventures of Bibi the Bison. Her husband Howie helped write the book. He said the bison are now part of the island. But King, a scientist, said she would rather not see even one bison on the island. She said the island's largest native plant eater should be a squirrel, not an 1,800-pound or 800-kilogram herbivore. Debbie Rosen said the fact that the bison survived on the island for so long says a lot about why they were so important to the United States. They were forced to adapt, she said. So that's an example of their resilience and why they're such a fitting symbol for our country. Because the American people are resilient people. King said scientists, conservationists, and the people who love the bison are trying to find a compromise that satisfies everyone involved. I'm Dan Friedel.
This is what's trending today. The next Summer Olympic Games, in 2020, will be in Tokyo, Japan. But what about the Olympics in 2024 and 2028? The International Olympic Committee and the cities of Paris and Los Angeles, California, made a decision on Tuesday. They agreed to meet in September to decide which city will host the Games in 2024. They also could decide which city will host the Games 4 years later. If the cities can agree on who will go first, the IOC will not have to make another Summer Olympics decision for several years. The mood of officials taking part in the meeting appeared good, according to the Associated Press. Paris has been discussed as the favorite to host the 2024 event, with Los Angeles hosting 4 years later. Why is the decision surprising? In the past, choosing who hosts the Olympics has been very competitive. The 2016 Olympics was awarded to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, in 2009. The campaign was described by some reporters as high stakes. That means there was a lot of pressure to win. World leaders and famous people all made their case for why their country should host the Olympic Games. In 2009, President Barack Obama and basketball star Michael Jordan traveled to Copenhagen, Denmark, for the final vote. They were supporting the effort of Chicago, Illinois, to be the host. When Rio de Janeiro was awarded the 2016 Olympics, people celebrated. The Brazilian city won the vote over Chicago, Madrid, Spain, and Tokyo. The head of the IOC is Thomas Bach. He came out of a meeting Tuesday holding the hands of Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti and Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo. All three seemed happy. If they do not reach an agreement by September, there will be a vote in Lima, Peru. That vote would decide only the host for the 2024 Games. Garcetti said it will be difficult for the mayors to convince their cities to go through the process again if one of us gets turned down. There was a lot of worry leading up to last year's Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. Many were concerned about the Zika virus, polluted water, and unfinished stadiums and housing. Bach said he thinks awarding two Olympics at once will ensure a stable future for the Summer Games. If Paris receives the 2024 Olympics, it will be the 100th anniversary of the last time the French capital hosted the Games. Los Angeles last hosted the Olympics in 1984, and the last Olympic Summer Games in the U.S. were in 1996. If the cities can agree, it could become a busy time for Los Angeles. The United States, Mexico, and Canada are competing to host the 2026 Soccer World Cup. Many games would be played in Southern California if the U.S. is chosen as the host. And that's what's trending today. I'm Mario Ritter.
Your telephone is running low on power while you wait to fly out of an airport. Other people have connected their cell phones and other devices to electrical outlets in the waiting area. Like you, they are preparing for the flight. Then you discover a public USB charging area close by. You quickly reach for a charge cord and connect your phone to the charging hub. Then you take a deep breath and sit back, happy to get the power for free. What could go wrong? Plenty. In addition to providing electrical current, phone charge cords can send and receive data. That free USB charging hub at an airport, hotel, or other public place may not only charge your phone. It also could be transferring information to and from the device. The USB charging hub could be connected to your phone and copy your contact list, email and text messages, voicemails, photographs, and videos. It can also copy passwords, banking information, personal contacts, and any other information stored on your phone. That public USB hub may even download programs, such as malware and tracking software, to your phone. This form of data transfer is known as juicejacking. If you want to charge your phone while traveling, you have other choices that do not increase your risks. Here are ways you can avoid juicejacking. Connect your phone only to electrical outlets, so data transfer is not possible. An available outlet may not be as near as a USB charging hub, but the few extra steps may keep you safe. It is better to use a distant wall outlet than a nearby USB charging hub. Carry a cord that only transfers electricity, not data. Be sure to mark the cord so you do not accidentally use it when you need to transfer data, such as saving photos to your computer. Carry an extra fully charged battery. Having one means you can charge your phone without having to worry about carrying a special cord or finding a power outlet. You can charge your phone with the extra battery wherever you are, even when you are far away from an outlet. If you must use a public USB charging center, make sure to turn off your phone completely. This may or may not prevent data transfer, but it will reduce the chances of it happening, depending on what phone you have. Remember to fully charge your phone before you leave home or work. iOS and Android operating systems have security programs designed to prevent juice jacking. But the safest way to charge your phone is to avoid public USB hubs. A few years ago, a computer security conference was held in Las Vegas, Nevada. One security company set up USB charging areas that had video screens. The screens showed the message, "Free cell phone charging." But when conference attendees connected their phones to the charging centers, the screens turned red and showed this warning: "You should not trust public kiosks with your smartphone. Information can be retrieved or downloaded without your consent." Luckily for you, this station has taken the ethical route and your data is safe. Enjoy the free charge. Brian Marcus is Chief Executive Officer for Ares Security, which set up the USB hubs. He explained that the purpose was to show how even security experts could be persuaded to charge their phones at such centers. Marcus told Krebs on Security, "Anyone who had an inclination to could put a system inside of one of these kiosks that, when someone connects their phone, can suck down all of the photos and data or write malware to the device." Naturally, not every USB charging hub is operated by those who are trying to take data from your phone or download malware onto it. Many charging stations just do what they say: charge your phone for free. But you should know that you are taking a risk when you connect to a public USB charging hub. It is better to be safe and charge from an electrical outlet rather than a USB port.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.